Okay, so last time we started a mathematical treatment of queuing, and we started with just defining a notation by which we can describe our queues. And so if you think of the notion of a queue being waiting in line, what do you need to know? Well, you need to know how people enter the queue, so that's your arrival process. You need to know how people, how jobs are served, and hence exit the queue, and so that's your service discipline, or your service process. You need to know how many spaces there are to wait for service. You need to know how many entities are providing service, and then potentially you need to know in what order jobs are taken for service, and finally, and not something we deal with, but it's potentially you need to know whether you only have a finite number of jobs in the system. Usually we assume that we have an infinite number of jobs in the system. We then looked at Little's Law, which relates the average number in the system to the average time spent in the average delay, the average time spent in the system, and relates them via the arrival rate. Okay. And so we saw that the interesting thing about this was it held no matter what your arrival and service processes were. The drawback of this is that for it to be of any use, you need to either know the average number in the system or the average waiting time in the system. So it's handy if you can observe one or the other of those values, but otherwise you can't. It does just give you a relation between the two. We then saw that to get sort of more definitive results, we needed to make assumptions about our system, and in particular, we needed, it was handy to assume that the arrival process was Poisson. Okay, so that's the first M in the Kendall notation. We saw that you could think of this Poisson arrival process as being a feed of many different entities generating jobs, and we saw that had interesting properties in that it's represented some sort of maximal randomness. If you looked in terms of time and inter-arrival times, you have exponential inter-arrival times, and these inter-arrival times possess this memoryless property. We noted that this led to the pasta property, Poisson arrival C, time averages. Okay, we then looked at sort of our most general case of the MG1 queue and saw that if we knew something about the distribution G, but not necessarily everything, then we could determine our average queue lengths, and from that our average waiting times. Okay, and what we needed to know then was the second moment, or the variance, or the mean and variance of our service discipline. So not necessarily the whole thing. We then finally looked at MM1 queues, so we assumed now Poisson service discipline, and we saw that we could, for these specific cues, we can explicitly derive the distribution on the state, where the state is the number of jobs in the queue. So what we're going to look at today is a number of applications of queuing theory to networks, and none of these will be precisely within the model that we looked at before, but we'll see how we can either change the model or expand on that model and get some interesting results. So the first system we'll look at is MM1 with bulking. So this is our basic queue, but now the arrival rate changes depending on the state of the system. And we did mention this in the last lecture and suggested that you have something like, if you have human behavior, if humans arrive to a shop and see that it's very busy, that they're going to have to stand in line for a long time, then a certain proportion of them will exit without seeking service. Okay, we'll look at the random early detection queue management strategy and say a few words about how that fits into this, or how we can think to model it as MM1 with bulking. We'll then look at switching results, and these systems assume that you have more than one server, so you have M servers, and then either you're allowed to wait if the M servers are busy, or once the M servers are occupied, then you're rejected. Okay, and so roughly, this you can think of this as relating to circuit switching paradigms and packet switching paradigms. And finally, we'll look at priority queuing. So in this case, we still have an MM1 queue, but now our the order in which we serve jobs differs. And so this isn't going to impact on our global statistics, so the average number of jobs in the system or the average waiting time, but for categories of jobs, obviously, it will have an impact, with lower priority experiencing longer waits. Okay, so we'll start with our first, we'll start with a general discussion of mathematics behind the queues, and then we'll look at our examples. And so in particular, in the first two scenarios, we will see that we can set this for the MM1 with bulking and with the Erlang, so the blocked call and delay call models. We'll see that we can set the system up to look very similar to our state model that we had before, but now either the arrival rate or the departure rates are going to vary depending on what state you're in. So we'll look at this generally and just argue that we can address it in the same way that we addressed the MM1 queue, just taking account in these taking account the variability of the arrival and departure rates. Okay. There's no reason that we, again, we'll use our balance equations to allow us to derive a distribution on the state of the queue, so the number of jobs in the system, but now where the rates are state dependent. Okay. Now, before doing that even, I'm just going to suggest that you might be concerned with how do we know that we are still have Poisson processes. And so the following, I'm going to note the following. If you merge a number of Poisson processes with different rates, then the merger of these, so the sum of these, is also a Poisson process with your rate being the sum of all the rates. And so in our multiple server case, our MM little m queues, we can assume that each server is serving it with a rate mu and a service time of 1 over mu. And the total rate then at which jobs are departing the system, it depends on how many servers are active at the time. So if you have 5 servers or n servers, then you would have a rate of n mu. Similarly, if you split a Poisson process in a random fashion, so if we start with a Poisson process of rate lambda and flip a coin, we assume each coin toss is independent, and that you have a probability of p, and 1 minus p for 2 outcomes, then you can split your process according to that coin flip, and you'll create 2 Poisson processes, and these will have rate p lambda and 1 minus p lambda. Okay, so if we think about state-dependent arrivals, jobs either entering or entering the system or not, then this will be covered by this idea of splitting the Poisson process. Okay. So, how do we proceed? Well, now, again, we can still think of having a Markov process, so our behavior is dependent solely on what state you're in, and with a well-defined transition between states. Now, again, our arrivals are potentially dependent on what state you're in currently, and our departures are dependent on what state you're in currently. So you go from lambda 0, lambda 1, lambda 2, and mu 1, mu 2, mu 3, etc. We again regard, we assume that all of these processes are our arrival and departure processes are still Poisson. Okay. We can define a state transition matrix in the same way that we did before. We assume that we can choose our period T, so that only at most one event occurs at a given time. And if you want to look at the probability of being in state 1, then it's the probability that either you were in state zero and departed, or you were in state two and, you were in state zero, a job arrived, you were in state two, a job received its service, was completed, or you stayed where you were originally. Okay. And so that's exactly what we had before, except now we have subscripts because our rates depend on what states we're in. So we can either write our balance equations or look at flow through across any point. And whichever way we do, as before, we get we can always write our probability of being in state n in terms of the probability of being in state n minus 1. It's a function of lambda over mu. But again, now with our subscripts, so what exactly lambda and mu are depends on what state you're in. Okay. As before, we can then formulate all our probabilities in terms of P0. So we have P1 in terms of P0. We can then plug in that value for P1 and get the P2 in terms of P0, plug that in and get P3 in terms of P0, plug that in and get P4 in terms of P0, etc. So, again, you get this, where before we would have had lambda over mu to the k, we now have lambda, we have subscripted arrivals and departures. Okay, we can calculate as before, you can now solve out for P0 by just observing that the sum of PKs must always sum to 1, and the PKs can be written in terms of P0, and so we can again arrive at a value for P0. And obviously then plug in to your original formula to get any PK that you're interested in. Okay, so that's the general approach. Now we're going to look at two examples where we can get some interesting results using that approach. The first one is the case of bulking. And this is the idea that the arrival rate into the system decreases, sort of as your state, as the state in the system gets larger. Okay, and so we'll look at a mathematically tractable version of that first. And then we'll have a quick discussion of some of the random early detection or RED queue management policy and look at how that can be formulated in this sort of fairly general fashion. Okay. So the idea is that the more the sort of fuller the system is, the busier the system is, the less arrivals you're going to have, typically, again, because either the system rejects arrivals or the arrivals self-select out. Okay. In the case of network traffic, typically it's the system making that decision. Again, if we have our example of something like a restaurant or a shop, then, again, the arrivals themselves make that decision. So we're going to look at a simple example where our arrival rate is just a function of the state that we're in, and in particular, again, the greater the state, you have an inverse relation between Q size and arrival rate. Okay, we're going to assume that we only have one server, and so it's again, it serves at the same rate then no matter what the system state is. Okay, so if you have lambda k is alpha over k plus 1, then you have your full rate alpha to start with, and then alpha over 2, alpha over 3, alpha over 4, alpha over n. Okay, mu's again are the same. And so I sort of cheated and I defined this so you can actually get some relatively simple equations out. So we solve the balance equations so we can define pk in terms of p0, and in particular pk is p0 alpha over mu to the k 1 over k factorial. Okay. And so obviously the k factorial pulls out of the product of 1 over I plus 1, and the alpha over mu pulls out of that. We can solve then for p0. And so we get that we have, this is 1 plus some k equals 1 to infinity, alpha over mu to the k over k, 1 over k factorial. You can pull that 1 in and take that from 0, and take the inverse of it then. And that sum gives you e to the, and so that'll give you e to the, the sum gives you e to the alpha mu, and the inverse gives you e to the minus alpha mu. So we can then plug in to our original formula to find pk. So that's straightforward enough. Okay, so that gives us the basic idea. And so now we'll have a look at a system that roughly reflects that idea, and we'll say sort of what, and we'll say a few words about what we're having to, what sort of simplifying assumptions we're having to make to place it into this MM1 with bulking type setup. Okay, so if you're doing this as an assignment, then you will have already probably read the papers and sort of started to think about this. You may not have started on the second part where we are actually modeling this or we're trying to analyze it through queuing theory. Okay. So, what's the idea of random early detection? Well, it's used in queuing. It's used to manage the buffers found in routers within a packet-switched network. Okay. Now, it's designed to work in conjunction with your transport layer protocol, such as TCP, in order to reduce the overall congestion, the loss and delay within a network. And so the goals here are to manage our queue length. So the longer the queue, the greater the chance of loss and delay is. So we want to sort of try to keep our queue length at a reasonable level. And we can do that either by explicitly dropping packets, which, you know, doesn't necessarily help loss, but by signaling congestion, we can reduce perhaps the demand for the queue, and therefore let the problem right itself naturally. Okay. So, what the process tries to do is signal congestion to the sender, and we'll mainly consider it in the context of TCP. In the context of TCP, the signal that it sends is it drops packets, and we know that if packets are dropped in the TCP context, then the reaction of the sender upon detection of the lost packet is to throttle back their sending rate. Okay. It is suggested that if there are other transport layer protocols which can explicitly change their rates based on signaling, then you might not need to actually drop the packet, but you could just mark the packet as well. And if there was a facility for, upon seeing a marked packet, reducing rate, then you could adjust your sending rate without actually having to lose a packet. But as we know, TCP only responds to loss. Okay. So just to give some context of the looking at what exactly a router is, we can think of it as having a number of components. So it has line cards, which perform our physical and data link layer functions. So they make sure that your packets arrive correctly. Contain buffers and scheduling algorithms to allow for the storage of packets if there's not sufficient resources. And in between sort of input and output, you have a switching fabric that allows you to move input from one line card to output from another line card. Okay. The controller is what's going to make all the decisions about who goes where. So if we see here, we can store our packets in two different places. We can store it on the input side or the output side. And as it turns out, storing on the input side can be problematic. You can reach the phenomenon called head-of-line blocking. And so here, if you have two packets that need to go to the same destination line, well, only one of them can be sent at a time. And so that potentially blocks other packets which could go to other destinations from being sent. So here you can see we have our three packets, of which we can only send two. And if we don't send this packet, then this packet is waiting behind it, even though if it wants to go here, it could go here. Okay. So, in general, the queues are implemented at the output side of our switch. Okay. And what that means is that if no matter where the input wants to go, it can be switched, and it's switched within a packet time. And so then we have more packets at the output that can be processed within any given packet time, but they can be queued at the output. Okay. So we need to have high-speed switches in order to do this, so the switch has to be able to switch n packets per packet time, okay, to the same destination. Okay, so we have now moved our queues to the output, and so data is being sent into the queue potentially at a higher rate than it can be sent back out, and so this queue can grow, and we therefore need a queue management scheme that regulates how the packet grows. And so, obviously, if we have a finite buffer, then when the buffer is full, you have to drop packets. Okay. And there's a number of ways in which you can drop the packets. You can just do it if you arrive to a full buffer, then you're dropped, and this may not, this is not necessarily a fair way of doing things, and it doesn't allow you to distinguish between different types of traffic. You could do it in a priority fashion or some way that you consider fair. But one thing to consider is that if you're dropping packets that have already been waiting in a queue, then the time they've spent waiting is wasted. Okay. So, additionally, if your queue is full, then you already are in a state where your packets are experiencing delay. And potentially, this is signaling that there is congestion within the network, and there's certainly congestion within that queue. Okay. So what random early detect does is it suggests that there are advantages to dropping packets even when the buffer is not full. Okay. And again, we can reduce delays by keeping our queues at smaller levels. Of course, we're possibly sacrificing by dropping packets, but more importantly, we're signaling our transport layer congestion control mechanisms before things get too bad. Okay, so we see that our queues are building up, and we signal to the transport layer to throttle back, even though we can still take a bit more data. Okay. Now, red is going to randomize the what data stream gets this signal, and that means that you aren't reaching a state of TCP synchronization, so you don't have a case where suddenly everybody is being signaled at the same time, because again, the queue is full, and in that case, everybody throttles back at the same time, and so you get this sort of these waves of throttling back and then everybody rising together. And the randomization also is in some sense fair, in that it's not sort of it doesn't disadvantage any one data stream over another. Okay, so what exactly does the algorithm do? Well, it calculates an average queue size, and based on that average queue size, it determines a probability with which packets should either be marked or dropped. Okay, so how does it do that? Well, you define thresholds for your queue, so you have a minimum and a maximum threshold. Okay, and then you have your average queue size. And you will either mark or, in our case, drop the packets according to the following. If your queue size average is less than your minimum threshold, then you admit everything. When your average is greater than the maximum threshold, then you admit nothing, so you mark all your packets. When the average is between the maximum and minimum, then you mark or drop the packets with a probability of PA, where PA is, again, a function of average. Okay, so here's the reference, the Sally Floyd and Jacobson paper, where this is first described. And I would actually urge you to have a look at it. I mean, if you're doing the assignment, it's already been referenced. But one nice thing about this paper is to look at how eminently readable the paper is, and certainly gives a very clear description of the algorithm and the benefits of the algorithm, and a good demonstration of how you can demonstrate the benefits of any given algorithm. Okay, so what does it do? It provides details of how average can be estimated and how PA is defined based on average. So average is calculated as a weighting moving average, and what this does is smooth transient changes in value. So if you happen to just have a burst that's not sustained, then using weighted moving averages smooths out that burst so that you might not be reacting, you won't react quickly to sort of spikes in values. Okay. The calculation of PA is designed to produce marked packets or dropped packets in a regular fashion. And so we start by just calculating a drop probability, which is some maximum probability, and it increases linearly between the minimum, when average is between the minimum threshold and the maximum threshold. Okay. We then use our second component, defining PA as PB over 1 minus count PB, to ensure that packets are dropped more regularly. And we do this by increasing the likelihood of marking dropping a packet, depending on count, which denotes how many undropped packets have there been since the last dropped packet. Okay, so the bigger, the longer it goes since you've dropped a packet, the more likely you are to drop the next. Okay, so that's, you know, again, if you read the paper, there's a very nice discussion of all of the components of this algorithm. So we can get some sense that in some way, this is a queuing system with bulking. The larger your, the more jobs in the system, the more likelihood you are to sort of move a job off out of the system. Okay. Now, if we want to model this, using our MM1 with bulking model, well, then we have to sort of make a few assumptions or a few adjustments to make it fit into that framework. Okay, so in particular, a couple of components stand out as not fitting in a state dependent rate format, and again, think that what we're trying to do is what our rate needs to be dependent only on our current state. Okay, so the first thing we've done is we're calculating average as a function of observations of the queue size up to the current time, so not just the current observation. And so this is not just a function of our current state. Okay. And so we're going to modify this by replacing average with just our Q value. Okay. So our second component, count, again represents state information over a number of transitions beyond the current queue size, and so we'll replace that and just use PB as our drop probability. Okay, so if we make those assumptions, we now can model our system as MM1 plus bulking. So PB is a function of current queue size, and we use that to define our arrival rate. Okay. Now, you get very long and complicated formulas doing this. They're straightforward, but they're messy. And so if you're doing the assignment, my advice to you is, you know, just persevere and grind out the actual formula. So if you define your transitions correctly, it is just a matter of sort of grinding out the formula. Okay, so that's one example that we can address within this fairly straightforward framework. Our second example is again looks at the switches and the idea of being able to connect to the appropriate in the appropriate fashion. But now we can assume that either we have blocking in the case of circuit switching, so if you can't connect input to output, then you drop the connection, and we would like to be able to say something about what's the probability of dropping that connection, or if you have buffering, so you have a packet switch, then if you can't make the connection in a single go, you're going to have experience delay within the system. Okay. And so we'll start with the analysis of blocking, and you know, this is mainly applied to circuit switching, but we can consider a telephone exchange that provides switched connections, and blocking occurs if there's not enough connections available. However, it's costly to provide these connections, and as we know, the demand for the connections is probabilistic in nature, and so systems are designed to meet likely load, but not peak conditions. Okay, and so typically traffic will be observed over time. Time will be in terms of days and times of the day, and so you'll get some busiest period, and you try to provision for most of the busy period. Because of the stochastic nature of traffic, we cannot guarantee that at all times you will have sufficient resources. So, if our switch system is blocked, again, if we don't have sufficient resources, then two things can happen. We can either have a loss model, the call is refused entry, or a delay model. Our packets typically are stored for later. You could think of it as calls if you have, say, a service center, a call center, and customers are willing to be put on hold. Okay, so you could that would be another application of our delay model. Okay, and so a typical setup that we can look at is a case of concentrating our data, and so we have a number of lines coming in. Think of them as being connected directly to users, and each user is going to be sort of using a line sporadically. So the sort of likelihood of all the lines being busy at the same time is slim. So we can concentrate our lines down into a smaller number. Okay, and so here this is somewhat outdated in the sense we're talking about having a sort of analog connectivity to the switch and the concentration then of our lines. But the basic premise still holds in that users come in on relatively low data rate lines, low bit rate lines, and you can still concentrate down the number used. Okay. So, in terms of queuing, we can consider this a system with M servers, where the servers are the lines out. The arrival rate lambda, the arrival rate lambda represents the aggregation of the traffic coming in on our multiple input lines. Okay, so we assume that we have Poisson arrivals and departures, and again, each server is serving the job in the same fashion. Okay, and we assume that once all of our servers are busy, then an arriving job is just blocked. Okay, so this is a finite buffer system. We have m places in the system. The arrival rate stays the same up until you have occupied all of your servers, at which point everything else, all new arriving jobs are turned away. Now, in terms of the service rate, well, again, we can think of aggregating our various service components. So the rate is just dependent on how many servers are busy. Okay. So this looks like it doesn't matter whether you think of having M servers or one server that can actually change its service rate, depending on how many jobs are available. Okay. So, again, this is just our MMQ with variable, departure rates, state-dependent departure rates. So, we can treat this in the same way we have sort of in our previous examples. We can define P of K, and from P of K calculate, we can define P of K in terms of P0, then use sum everything to 1 to calculate what our value for P0 is. Okay, and so that's what we've done here. P0 is the inverse of 1 plus the sum of the pk's, k equals 1 to m. Okay, and we see we can, our variable service rates now pull out, we have our mu, and then we get a k factorial term, since it's, again, going up from the k representing the number of servers that are busy for each state. Okay, so we get a relatively clean representation of P0. We can then plug that in to determine our values for pk, and obviously that works up till M, and since we have a finite state system, we only have states up to M. Pk is 0 for any k greater than M. Okay, so that's straightforward to calculate. Now, for this system, what's important for us is to ask the question, well, how many of our calls are going to be blocked? And so the probability of blocking or loss is the probability that you're in state K, in state M, where all the servers are busy. Okay, and again, think Poisson arrival, C time averages. So Poisson arrival to a busy system, well, the probability that the arrival will arrive to a busy system is just PK, PM. Okay, so that's just obviously PM for all of for this. Okay, now this formula has been around for a long, long time. It was developed in 1918 by A.K. Erlang, a Danish telephone engineer. Okay, and so he gives his name to the loss, the blocking formula, and the delay formula. So this probability of blocking or loss is referred to as the Erlang B formula. Okay. Additionally, he gives his name to the measure of load or traffic, and this is measured in Erlangs. And an Erlang is defined to be the number of simultaneous calls in progress, or the offered or the traffic measure is the number of simultaneous calls in progress, or the offered load or traffic intensity. Okay, so we've looked at those ideas before, and the offered load is the arrival rate times the average holding time, the average call duration, and so that's lambda over mu. And one way to think of this again is to think that one airline of traffic would keep a single trunk completely busy. So during the duration of a call, you should have on average one arrival. Okay, so that formula is not easy to calculate, and again, we have a number of components. We have the offered load, we have the probability of blocking, and we have the number of lines or trunks available, and so it's not straightforward to calculate, but these three quantities are related typically either in tables or in graphical form. Okay, and so here we see in our example, we have a probability of loss, and that's on a log scale, and we have that's mapped against the offered load, And then these curves represent the relation given a given a number of servers. So we started, here's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. Okay. And so again, this data is available either as graphs or tables. Okay, it's just to look at an example of how this data is used. Or we can think of aggregating channels onto trunks. And here we have 96 channels being aggregated onto 24. So we can assume that our messages, our data is of size on average 100 bytes. And so you have a rate, you have a number of channels, a certain rate, and then a smaller number of channels, we're going to assume the same rate. Okay. And so we can ask a number of questions. We could ask about traffic. So in this case, we fixed our number of channels. So what we can ask about is how our offered load, so how our traffic is going to impact on our loss. Okay. Another question, we might ask, well, how many channels do we need to provide given an offered load? Okay, so in this case, we want to know what sort of offered load we can support. Okay, and we have a probability of loss of 0.01 or 1%. And we have a number, we have 24 trunks, and so this will give us how much traffic can be carried. Okay. So, if magically made 24 trunks appear here, and we see roughly we have 15 and a half airlongs worth of traffic can be carried. Okay. Now that 15 and a half airlongs of traffic is coming in on our 96 lines. So we determine how, so we need to relate our airlongs to our arrival rate. And so we know that our airlongs are equal to our arrival rate divided by our service rate. We have the service rate we need it in packets per second and or messages per second. So we have bits per second and then bits per message. Okay, and so that gives us a service rate of 80. And so we have lambda over mu equals lambda over 80. And we can arrive at a value for lambda. So that's the aggregate arrival rate, but our messages are arriving in along 96 channels. We assume that everybody's going to behave the same, so we can split out our arrival rate along the 96 channels, so we just divide our aggregate by 96, and we get an arrival rate of 12.9 messages per second. Okay, now there's a number of ways in which we can calculate the traffic intensity of a link. If we want to observe our traffic, then we can think of it as the total busy time over all trunks, and we can measure that, and then divide it by the measurement time. So, in order to convince ourselves of this, we just need to look at the definition of our arrival rates. So, our average transmission time is 1 over mu, and again, that's given by the time the system is busy. So, if you want to calculate the rate, it's the time the system is busy divided by how long any individual job is busy. So this gives you the average number of jobs in the system. And then the arrival rate is just the time the number of jobs in the system divided by the time over which we've observed that. Okay, so taken together, again, we get our lambda over mu is we can observe our time that any link is busy and divide it by the observation time. So that gives us a way of actually measuring the jobs in the system. Okay. So, we'll play, I'll let you play around a little bit more with those sorts of results in the tutorial problems. So that's one possibility, and again, the blocking occurs primarily in circuit switched systems. If you have packet switched systems, you then end up with delays. So you have queues and then waiting for service. Okay, so now we assume that if there's not enough servers for the jobs, that they will queue and wait. Okay. So if we assume that our system is not completely overloaded, then this is a good model, although in practice, obviously, our buffers are finite. And also, for various reasons, excessive delay is problematic. Okay, but the setup for this is similar to before, except now, and before we cut off, once we reached our maximum number of servers, now we just keep going, and so our jobs are now waiting for servers. All of the servers are busy, so our service rate for anything above M is M mu. Okay, so again, it's easy enough to write down our equations. Now we have to split it into two cases. The case where, again, our service rate is growing, and then the case where we're beyond state M and our service rate now is fixed. Okay. And again, the equations remain the same. So now we have to sort of again stop growing at M, and then beyond M we have a fixed surface rate. Okay, so it's possible to solve these equations. And we just need to plug in our sums of pKs have to be split off again into the two cases where we're below capacity and when we're at capacity. And this, again, gives you a somewhat complicated formula. So that allows us to, so we've summed up all of our probabilities and solved for P0. And then we can just return and plug back into PK, again noting that you have to be careful of what your value of K is, and whether it's greater than or less than M. Okay, so again, we can say that what we're interested in now is what's the probability of delay, and what's the actual delay that the system, that packets are going to experience. Now, the probability of delay is the probability of arriving to a state greater than M, greater than or equal to M. And so it's just the sum k equals m to infinity pk. And so we can just plug in our values for pk. At least we're back to only one condition. Again, where we our server rate has stopped at m mu. Okay. So again, this is the sum of sum of exponents, and so you get this 1 over 1 minus lambda over m mu component by pulling out the appropriate by isolating the exponents. Okay. And okay, I'm not okay. Ah, yes. And then, of course, we need to plug in P0. So we have this component times P0, which is this component. And you can clean that up a bit to get still a somewhat complicated formula. Okay. Now, as before, this is the Erlang-C formula, and as before, we can you don't solve it directly, but you resort to either tables or graphs. Okay, and the tables or graphs relate the probability of blocking the offered load, the lambda over mu, and the number of resources, the number of lines available. Okay, so we have the same thing. We've got delay now. It says probability of delay as a percentage, and then our offered load in air lungs, and our number of trunks, 10, 20, 30, etc. Okay, so for this, we really want not just to know what is the likelihood of delay, but to get some handle on, well, you know, is that a short delay, a long delay, etc. So we can calculate, since we have our probability distribution, we can just directly calculate the average number stored in the system, the average number. And so, again, we just directly plug in our values for PK, and we can write this in terms of P0. No need to calculate out P0, but note that this component here is PD. Okay, so here we go. Yeah, here's the PD in terms of P0. And that's what we have here. Okay. So that gives us the average number in the queue. We can then use Little's Law to find the delay. It's just NQ over lambda. Okay. And if we can define mu in terms of our bit rate and message length. Okay. So to look at an example, again, of how we might use this, we have, again, we've got incoming channels. They have a certain bit rate, and that will produce an offered load. And so the question is, given a certain offered load, how many output channels do we need to keep the probability of delay at a certain value, in this case 20%. Okay. So our offered load is going to be defined by the input rate of messages and then the message size. Okay. So our arrival rate is aggregate over all of our all of our input channels. So we have 120 messages per second. Our service rate is given by the transmission rate divided by the message length is 24 messages per second. And our offered load then is just lambda over mu, which gives us 5. Okay, so we can then examine our graph. We've got an offered load, we've got a probability, and so how many trunks do we need for that? And so we have 5 Erlang here, delay of 20%, and this is now not log scale, so again, there's lots of tables out there. And so what we see is that we're going to need 8 trunks to carry that load and to keep the delay, probability of delay, down to 20%. Okay. Again, given that we've have our probability of delay of 20% and that using 8 trunks, we can calculate what that average delay value will be. And so, again, W is in terms of probability of delay, the number of trunks available. Okay. So, those examples that we've seen all fall into the category, at least analytically, all fall into the category of state-dependent rates. And we've seen how we can use our analysis of those sorts of systems to come up with reasonable or interesting results. Okay, all on the assumption that both our arrival processes and our departure processes are Poisson, which again we've tried to argue is not. I mean, if we assume that our initial setup was thus, then it's not unreasonable to assume that the modified setup is also thus. So we'll take a break here, and then we'll return to look at one more example of queuing, which is priority queues. And the idea here is that, again, jobs are going to be served according now to a different discipline, depending on their priority. So we'll serve high-priority jobs first, then low-priority jobs. So overall, it's not going to make a difference, but obviously for individual jobs or classes of jobs, it will make a difference. So we'll take that up again in the second half of the lecture.